Today's daf from Masechet Erevin is a very painful one because it's basically the last daf. We'll split it into two. Okay. So today's daf is daf Kuf Dalid. We'll leave a little bit over so we can have a little bit more on Kufay, which is almost just a tiny little piece. And we'll start at the Halakha Mishnah on daf Kuf Dalid, Omud Aleph, where we continue the ideas of things that are special in the Beis HaMikdash, things that cannot be done outside of the Beis HaMikdash. And that begins, Bozkin melech agabi kevesh b'shvil shelo yachaliku. So you're allowed to be bozek. Bozek means to sort of break things up in such a way that they split apart. This is talking about salt. In order to get salt into your out of a container of salt, if it isn't made, obviously, the way the modern ones are with rice and so on, it gets a little bit sticky. And what you do is you have to put your fingers in it a little bit to loosen it up. But you're allowed to do that. And you could put it even across the kevesh of the Mizbeach. So you could scatter it around the kevesh. And that way the Kohanim don't fall when they're going up in case it's raining. Or as the Rambam says, even just when things drip from the korbanos and so on. And otherwise they can get themselves killed. And even though, as we'll see why later, what the takana is a takana not to use a galgal. So now the question is, what exactly is a galgal? The pashtus of the galgal is that it's a, what's the word in English for just a crank? Because we'll see, there's two issues over here. One is the noise that is generated. And that's a question whether that's Hashmah's call. The other is that we're worried that you're going to end up using that water for Isser, like pouring out in the garden and so on. So Tosus learns that that's only if you're bringing up an awful lot of water, that we make a gezer like this, in which case it doesn't mean a crank. It would actually mean a windlass, which is a combination of a crank and a winch, so that it really brings up tons of stuff. And because of that, we make this gezeira. So, as we'll see when we get into the Gemara. But in any event, in the Beis HaMikdash, as we said, we don't make these kind of gezeiras. And because of that, it would be okay to draw the water out of the Borag Olah and the Borag Adol, which are inside of the Beis HaMikdash, the way Rashi learns in the Azara. And you can also even take from the Be'er HaKir, on Yom Tov, now the Be'er HaKir, the Gemara is going to explain what HaKir means, but it's outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So normally, you're not allowed to do this if you're going to be using this winch device or windlass device. But when it comes to this particular case, we'll see why you're allowed, they were matir doing that, even though normally you're not allowed to do it on Yom Tov, but you cannot do it on Shabbos. We'll have to see why that was true. Rami le Ravikam Parshani le Rova, how could we say that it says in this Mishnah that poskin melech agabei hakevesh b'shvil shelo yachalik, and that you're allowed to break up the salt and just put it all around on the kevesh for the kohanim, and you can only do this specifically. This is one of the things you can only do in the Beis HaMikdash. So one thing, you can put it on the kevesh, but you can't do this on your driveway, right? So don't try this at home. The problem is, v'ramini, in the Braita it says that you can do what appears to be exactly the same kind of thing in your own home. Let's say, so let's say your courtyard is like completely swamped with a lot of rainwater. Everything is muddy. Nobody wants to go out at the front door. So you're allowed to bring straw and you can spread it out. And this is mutter anywhere, even in your own chutzit. Well, how do you explain the fact that the Mishnah limits this to as one of the special cases that is mutter in the Beis HaMikdash? Answers the Gemara, there's a big difference between straw and salt. The difference is that shiny tevin lo mevatele. Remember that the straw, especially in those days where the straw was used all the time for animal feed, you're going to have your horse outside, is going to be eating the straw. There's no way you're going to just leave it there. It's expensive. So there, it's not going to become part of the ground. And because of that, there's no chashash that you're going to be over on binyan. Mashen came where it's salt. What are you going to do with the salt afterwards? So if salt over there, it actually becomes part of the ground, so then it can even things out. And because of that, you can actually come lide binyan. So over there, it was usur. But in Chinami, the Mishnah did not mean to imply that you're not allowed to scatter things bichlal in order to avoid slippage on Shabbos. It was specifically addressing salt. I want to understand. To me, there's forget about Shabbos. This doesn't make sense to me. What are we talking about over here that we're scattering salt? Are we going to be mevatel the salt, that it's actually going to stay there the way you just we're learning apparently over here that that's the reason that you can't do it in the Medina. But if you're going to be mevatel it, then you're over on an iser anyway, because you're not, forget about Shabbos. Forget about the din of binyan on Shabbos. There's an iser of binyan in the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, the Beis HaMikdash as given, exactly, built to specification as it was given, Hakol Miksav Miyad Hashem, Alai Hiskil, as Shmuel and David derived from Nevi'ahs. So, I mean, if that's the case, how are you allowed to add anything to the Binyan of Beis HaMikdash by leaving the salt there? Is there going to be mafkir there? Forget it. Okay, that's no good. And if you're not, so then basically you've got a chatzitza. Because how the Kohen is going to be walking, remember, Kohenim have to be at all times in touch with the Aveda and in touch with the Beis HaMikdash. So their feet have to be in touch with the ground. And because of that, they can't wear shoes. If you're going to put salt all over the Kevesh, how are the Kohanim going to be on the Mizbeach, on the Kevesh of the Mizbeach, when they're doing the Aveda? So no matter what you tell me, if it's meant to stay there, you're not allowed to do that. If it's not meant to stay there, then it's a chatzitza. So one way or the other, this is a disaster. Answers the Gemara, you're right. But you know what we're talking about over here is you can only put that on the Mizbeach during the time that they're going to be doing Halachas Evorim. So Halachas Evorim means that we're bringing up the actual parts of the carbon, not the dam. We're not talking about the dam. The aveda of the carbon is to put the carbon onto the Mizbeach, but there's no aveda to walk with it up the Kevesh, and therefore that part doesn't have to be done with the Kohen who's in touch with the ground, and therefore it wouldn't be a problem. What are you talking about, says the Gemara Velo? What, that's not considered to be an aveda, Halachas Evorim? It says beferish in the Pasuk. After it talks about the din of Akerev Vakra'ayim, and there it's talking about what to do, the Akerev Vakra'ayim, and you have to wash everything off and get it ready. And then it says, V'ikriv HaKohen HaTakol V'iktir HaMizbecha. So what is that, Hiktir HaKohen HaTakol? It's not referring to obviously you can't be talking about burning on the Mizbeach, because afterwards it says to burn on the Mizbeach. So what is it referring to? It's referring to Holachat Evorim LeKemesh. It's actually, Vihikriv means bringing it close to the Mizbeach as an actual Aveda. So how are you telling me the Kohen doesn't have to be in touch with the ground? Of course he does, like anything else that a Kohen has to do. Answers the Gemara, okay, sorry, that was a mistake. You're right. And what we meant was not when you're taking up the Evarim of the Korbanos. What we meant was when you're taking up the Eitzim, so there you need to bring up wood, and the wood is there for the Maaroch. That itself is not an Aveda of a Kohen. So in order to avoid them slipping and hurting themselves, so then at that point we put down some salt. Now, apropos to this whole discussion, Rava was once Derech Barabi, that if your yard is all muddy and it's covered with Beimei Geshami, you're allowed to bring straw, and Miradeba, you could spread it up. Amalei Rava, Rava, wait a minute, you can't give a psak like that, which will allow people to believe that they're allowed to just do what they would normally do during the week. That's not the halacha. Doesn't it say in the Braita, you can do it, but with one important caveat, which is kishu meradeh, eno meradeh lo besal, velo bekupa, ela beshulei kupa. If you're spreading out this straw, you can't do it from the normal way that you would out of a box or a basket. You can't do that. You can only take it out of the bottom of a box, which means that you break the container and you have the bottom, or it means you hold it upside down, you put it on top, as Tosfos learns. But it's got to be done with a shinui, because we need to make it very clear that you have to be careful that there shouldn't be any attempt to be ashvuyei gumos and to even things out and so on. So how could Rava just get up there and not make that clear, which is extremely misleading? So what, in fact, did he do? He did it wrong. And as soon as Rava heard that, he realized, oh my gosh, of course, that was wrong. So hadar ukim Rava amora alei. So Rava immediately got an amora to spread the word, and he was derish. He got up and he said, excuse me, I made a mistake. Dvarim shamarti lifnechem ta'uten biyadi. I made a real mistake, and I'm taking it back. Baram, the correct thing would have been to say like this, Kach amru mishum Rabbi Eliezer, and then he quotes the Braita, Kishum Radeh, Inom Radeh lo besal, lo bekupa, ela bishulei kupa. Okay, so now we've got this next piece, which is the question of taking things with a, according to Tosfos, a windlass, and that's reasonable. I mean, other Rishonim don't make that specific diuk that it's got to be something that raises a lot of water at a time. So it might mean just with a crank, and then we'll have to see what the problem is. So it happened once. This is what leads us to think that there was another issue involved, namely the noise that you're making. And being as the Rebbe can tell us tonight, that a lot of people just make a lot of noise and they call it music. So we were afraid that the takana, not generating musical sounds, would apply even to noise of just rolling this crank up and getting there. That's about how some of that Jewish music sounds nowadays. I'm sure Naftali can back us on that if he were here. So in any event, so Ula was in Rav Menashe's home and somebody knocks on the door. So Ula goes wild. What? Knocking on the door? On Shabbos? Who is this guy? Leichel gufa de kamachel el shabata. His own body should be mechulal. He's mechulal Shabbos like this. You don't have to make a sound. Omele rovas, arabas, arabas atulo. They didn't make, it's not sounds that are usher. It's musical sounds that are usher. Lo usher el kol shel shir. Etveabai, is that true? Doesn't it say that you are allowed on Shabbos to use a siphon? It's funny, the word for the siphon that you use here is a dio fe, which means a dual mouth, right? So that's basically how they made the siphon. So you got like two pieces, they stick together in the middle, you start sucking it up, and then it continues on into the other barrel. Okay, so it's called a double mouth. And metifin me'arak l'chola b'shabbat, and you can let the water go out of this arak. Now, what an arak is basically it's something that's used. You know what? It was used in modern days also, not for anything that has to do with music, but it was used for putting starch or sizing in the good old days when in America they used to iron things. You guys in South Africa, I'm sure you still see this, right? Because you've got these machines that iron for you. And what you do is over there, you fill it up with this liquid, which is sizing, depending on what you're doing, or starch. Keep your finger over the end, and you loosen it, and the water drips out, right? So over here, they would make this kind of thing and fill it up with water, and then you could adjust the speed the water goes out, or the holes, the size of the holes that the water goes out, and you can have the water dripping down on something that generates sound, which would basically be as close as you could get to generating white noise to get to sleep and so on, right? It's a big thing in this stuff. And it goes tingle, tingle, you know, and it's putting you to sleep. So it says over here. Now, at this point, we believe that that's not what it's talking about. And it's talking about using a me'arik alarm clock. So you're taking it out of the arik to make noise to wake someone up. So it says over here that if someone is ill, so you're allowed to use, on Shabbos, you're allowed to use this arak for him. And our assumption was that this is talking about where you're trying to get someone to get up, to take medication and so on. You're afraid to shake him or to startle him in any way because he's ill and it could affect him badly. So you use the arak as an alarm clock. And over here it says you can only do that for someone who's ill. And that means that normally, You can't, right? I mean, what's the case? Isn't it talking about that the guy's asleep, lav d'nayim, and you want him to wake up? Now, to wake up, you obviously do not want to generate a nice, gentle tone, which is musical. You're trying to wake him up. If you're trying to wake him up, you're going to be making noise, not music, by definition. So if that's the case, it appears that normally, shma mina ludekal is usher. Any kind of sound is usher. Because otherwise, why is it only mutter for a chole? Says, well, no, it's talking about that the chole can't get to sleep, and you're trying to put him to sleep. So you need to really relax him. And it's talking about that you set it up in such a way, demishtama kikala dezamzumi. So it's supposed to sound like Zoom sounds, you know, those little when you call someone on Zoom, which is asleep. So it's zumzumi sounds, such the sounds of bells. And that is everybody's maya. So this doesn't prove Ula. Okay, Eitzve from another Braisa. Hamashamer pirotav vipnei ha'ofot. You're trying to keep birds away from your produce. Or you've got pumpkins and you're trying to scare away these animals from eating up your pumpkins. So Mishamer Kedarko B'Shabbat, you could stay out there and do what you normally do, but you have to be careful not to clap. Why not to clap? Oh, it must be because you're generating sound and you're trying to scare them away by clapping. It's not musical clapping. Lo yitapach, don't bang on your chest. Lo yirakeid, and don't do the old Zulu dances, you know, when you make a lot of noise, boom, 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 you know. You can't do that either. And isn't that usher because it's making noise, right? So it looks like Ula is right. And that any kind of noise, kalulu de kala is usher. And that Rabba was wrong. It's not only music. Omer Avach Bar Yaakov, that's a special case. That is a case we're specifically talking about scaring away animals or scaring away birds. And over there, do you know how frustrated you get when you make those sounds and the birds don't leave? So what do? You pick up a stone and you throw it at them. The guy's going to go crazy. So in the end, he's going to maybe even throw it into Rosh Hashanah from where he is, and he'll forget. So because of that, we asked that you make this. And it's nothing to do with the general gezerah of not making sounds. Oh, yeah? So how do you explain Adi Amar Rav Yudah Amar Rav? That women that play nuts, in those days they didn't use marbles, they used nuts, they didn't play billiards, they played nuts. So you would shoot nuts at the other nuts. And basically what you do with marbles. And you can't do that on Shabbos. Why is that Aser? And what possible reason is through Aser playing nuts? It must be that when the nuts are hitting, they make noise. So it must be the Karmoli Kala, right? In which case, it's certainly not musical noise. And Kol, it appears that every single type of noise that you make is Osir on Shabbos. He says, Gemara, no, that's not true. The reason that it's Osir is because when you play this game, you have to play it directly on the ground. And if you play it on the ground, so then you may smooth out the playing field because you want, obviously, to have a nice playing field. And Dilma Ati Lashviye Gumot, because if you don't believe that that's the problem, how do you explain the fact that Rabbi Yehuda said that women who are playing apples, you know, playing apples is the same as playing nuts, but there's somewhat of a difference, namely that when you play apples, they don't make noise when they hit each other. That would be like the nuts, right? So, mayulidikala ika. So, obviously, the only reason that you wouldn't be allowed to play apples would be because dimatila shvuye gumas. That must be the reason. So, again, we don't have any indication that just plain old noise is a problem. Okay, it's not. Now, of course, the reason for this whole discussion finally comes up. How do you understand? I like that. Could you pass that through the screen, please, that apple? Pass that through the Zoom. I've got the new Zoom. Not the bitten apple. Give me the new apple. There we go. So doesn't it say over here that you're only allowed to get water out of the Bor HaGolah and the Bor HaGadol in the Beis HaMikdash? Now, why is that? Obviously, because you're making noise. I mean, what else is it, right? And it's only being matured over here. Remember, we're talking about a crank that makes a lot of noise or a windlass, which makes more noise. So this is Dafka B'Mikdash and B'Medina Lo. My Taima, Lav Mishum Delude Kalav Asir. The only thing I can come up with is that it makes a lot of noise. No, that's not why. The point over here, and again, this is why Tosafos insists that we're talking about a windlass and we are not talking about a crank, is because it pulls up so much water that we have a gezerah Hashem yamalei leginato v'lechurvato. Generally, we wouldn't be concerned about this. Somebody is taking out water. Why in the world would he use water for his garden? But when you lift up water with one of these devices, I mean, you're picking up 50 gallons of water at a time. When you put 50 gallons of water to take a little drink, so the 50 gallons of water, he pours it out into what normally waters his garden, and that we're worried about. So So therefore, we need to be careful. A Maimar was Matir, actually. Shore Lamim Labugola B'Mechuzah. So in Mechuzah, they had this, and a Maimar nonetheless allowed them to use it on Shabbos. And it certainly is pretty far from the Beis HaMikdash, to say the least, if you're in Mechuzah. So why was he Matir it? Because he said, my time goes around. Look, what's the whole big problem over here? The problem is Shem Yamale Leginato V'Lechruvato, okay? Now, I got to tell you something about Mechuzah. There ain't no gardens in Mechuzah, okay? And there are certainly no runes in Mechuzah. I mean, they wouldn't allow a rune in Mechuzah. And because of that, what's the problem? There's nowhere that somebody is going to pour out this water that we have to read Gozer. And therefore, the Gezerah doesn't apply. This is like one of those Gezerahs like don't wash your floor because you'll be mashvi gumas because there are floors that are made out of dirt. You know, this is the same thing we saw in Bechuzah. The floors are tiled, and they're not made out of dirt. It's the same kind of thing. But then Amemar saw that actually there were things that they were doing with big water draw. And what was that? They were Torah Bokitna. They would soak the linen, the flax. There's actually another girsa over here, which is the bunta. Which is spelt, but whatever. But they needed a lot of water for that. So then he was afraid that they would end up doing that on Shabbos also. So because of that, he was asaluhu. Now this becomes very nagei halacha lemaisa, because I mean it implies that we're not in the end we're not really worried about ula, right? Because I mean otherwise why would he have been? We've got the problem of the. No, but a swimming pool isn't usher to be mamale. We've got the problem of the noise, right? And he apparently didn't take that into consideration, the noise, which implies that halacha lemaisa, we do not worry about noise making on Shabbos. And so lemaisa, because of this line, we end up paskening that you're allowed to make noise on Shabbos. So that the only noise that you don't make is where it is supposed to be some type of musical sound. I mean, look, a banging like a drum is, you know, musical sound. That people just don't make for noise purposes. They make for musical purposes, which means that all these guys that come up and they start dancing and shul and stuff like that, making a lot of noise, although that would be us. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, the little bells that they have on the Sefer Torah, on the, when they put the thing on the top. So there's many poskim that answer that. Others are matirid based on the Simchas Torah ideas where you do all these Yisurim, but they said it was mutter because it was sort of tzarech for kavadat Torah, so it comes out to be tzarech mitzvah. So that became, as usual, sort of like a blanket het or anything you would do in shul would be okay. Halacha lemaisa, the Mishnah Berurah is not too excited about it. He just says, you know, if that's the minhag hamakom, so fine, you can do it. But anyway, getting on, so it's amazing. It's like this one line has saved us. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to knock on a door, you know? So then the other thing that we had in the Mishnah is mibe'er hakir. Now, what is a hakir exactly? So Shmuel says it is the bor that was actually used, shehikru alel dvarim vitirua. So even though this particular bor was not in the Azara, and since it's not in the Azara, it should have been prohibited. Nonetheless, they were matir it because they brought up all kinds of issues around it. And there were so many heterim that they found that because of the tremendous need where the Oile Geula were coming up from Bavel, and that it's mutter for the Tzerech HaRabim, that the Rabim has the Keach if they need to be Mavatal Gzera in cases where the Rabim has a Tzerech. So this particular well, they allowed to use even though they were using this mechanism, the swindlers. As the Gemara, that cannot be the explanation. Because in the Brayse it says, "Lo kol haborot hakirot ituru elazu bilvad." Now, come on. If the meaning of hakirot is iamr chikru dvarim, it's called hikru because of all the things that happened to it and all of the various svaras that they brought around it. What do you mean, not all of the Beirot? There was only this bor that he grew as. What do you mean, only this one? This is a type of bor. That's the point. It's not a bor that has a particular history where he grew or something, right? So please, give me a different explanation. Oh, it says, I'll explain it to you. this was a bore that was not a cistern. It was a very rare kind of thing, in which it was actually a be'er mayim chayim, so it was constantly renewing water. And the reason they called it the hakir is because of the pasuk. So the pasuk in Yirmiyahu is not a very pleasant pasuk, because it's talking about the way that Klal Yisrael keeps doing bad things. But anyway, so it says over there, ki hakir b'yirmimeah, kein hakira ra'ata. So it's ra'a keeps renewing itself the way that a well, which is like exactly this word, ka'akir, the way that this well continues to flow. So we took that word, and it's the bor hakir, so that people will remember. Obviously, they are meant to remember, but the aliyah back to the Beis HaMikdash, the tikkunim that they need to do. So they call this the bor hakir. Gufa. Lo kol haborot hakirot hitiru, ela zel bilvat. And what was the story? Kisha'alu b'nei ha'gola, they camped right around this well, chonu alel. And because of that, there was a special nevias that came to Chagai Zechariah. That's what it seems to mean, right? That Chagai Zechariah and Malachi, who were with them, so they were matir them. But the truth is, it doesn't mean that. Lo neviim shebinei. We're calling Klal Yisrael the b'nei ha-neviim, because remember the whole story, what they couldn't remember, Hillel couldn't remember, whether you're supposed to bring the Karban Pesach, if you bring it on Erev Shabbos, how you bring it. And they said, Anach leb li Yisrael, im lo neviim heim, b'nei neviim heim. So that basically the minhagim that Klal Yisrael has is the equivalent of the neviim shebinei. That seems to be the pshat in the Gemara. So it's minhag avotam b'yedeyem. So we know that this bor was always used from that time. And because of that, there was a heter based on the fact that if it is used by the tzibur in such a way, then nobody is going to come to utilize it for a private use that could be an iser. And because of that, there's a strong grounds to be mater, just like we were willing to do in Mechuza. Right? So if there was no chashash that you would come, l'day yeser, so because of that, they were matir this because it was used specifically by the Eilei Gaila. It's something like a svara of the b'nei chaburis rizim heim type of idea. Whatever, I mean, it's not brought anywhere what the particular logic was of the heter that the chachamim gave, but, I mean, you could see plenty of grounds for why there wouldn't be a chashash that they would learn out from here to others. Rabbanea apparently has some archaeological data about this, and we give the floor to Rabbanea.
Thank you. The discussion of the cisterns of Har HaBayit, there are over 30 cisterns of Har HaBayit. One of them is nicknamed the Great Sea because it's so vast and with the whole. And there are people that spend time on the standing to identify these and how they relate. It's fascinating. I will take pictures and put it up on the Daf Musings. The other thing...
How big is the Big Sea one?
Vast.
How vast is vast?
Larger than the building of my house.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, much larger.
That's good, isn't it?
Millions of gallons. Yeah, vast. Mm. And Rittmeyer, who Shita and Amai disagree with, but shows look at the locations and suggest therefore the outlines of what's inside and what's outside. So Nagea, what's in the Azara, and this Mishnah figures heavily in the discussions. The systems of Ensa also in the Book of Maccabees and other things. Rebbe one year took time here to discuss what Rebbe called assumptive xeros, like electricity. Assumptive xeros, right. That was the terminology.
Here I discussed that?
As they state.
No, we have discussed that many times, that even where we don't have a record of a gezeira, where we know that something needs to be dealt with, that the Gemara will say, v'ligzor shema. What do you mean, v'ligzor shema? I mean, it's your business, v'ligzor shema. Right? So that is an idea. An assumptive gezeira means that where something calls for a gezeira, that we assume that such a gezeira exists. So that there's a standing issue to prevent, you know, like so we had, let's say, the leagues are, by the case we just had of the Sefer Torah that falls down, that maybe it'll fall into the Rishus Rabbim and you'll go and you'll get it and stuff like that. That's what I mean by assumptive xeris, but I'm not quite sure why I would have mentioned it here. I don't recall I don't know how many times. This may be from 4 times ago. I mean, I don't know. It's a long time, you know.
I think the discussion was on how everybody felt electricity should be us. Or
I know, but why did it come? Oh, maybe somebody raised like an issue about, you know, about using noise, things that make noise on Shabbos or something like that. That could be.